and Pike. Here on Pros and Cons, our contestants will be debating which two fine members of the Milky Way galaxy would make the best duo for the finest of feasts. Monica Belushi once said, "When I eat with my friends, it is a moment of real pleasure. When I eat, I really enjoy my life." Let me introduce you to two of my good friends from the It's Got Star Trek podcast. It's not Rihanna and Ashlyn, because I forgot to change the tags. It's, in fact, Patrick and Dan. Hi, guys. How are you doing? Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi,
to the
how's
court.
It going?
Hello. Very well. Let me change your names very quickly because obviously you are not Rihanna and Ashlyn from the amazing, excellent Dura Sisters podcast. No, where are you guys from and what do you do?
That's a good question.
Yeah, well, you seem to go first, Patrick. You go.
I don't think so. I think you were going first.
Well, you were going first.
I'm pretty sure I interrupted you.
Okay. Well, my name's Dan. I live here in Virginia, Arlington, Virginia, and I am one of three members, actually one of four members, the fourth Ooh. Member being you all out here.
The audience.
The audience of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
And strategy is to ingratiate himself to the audience ahead of time. I understand. All right, is it my turn?
Yes.
I'm Patrick, also one of the four components of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. I
the
agree
fourth
with the
being,
audience
being
thing.
You all,
you beautiful people out there in
me?
The audience.
Even
you.
Especially you.
And I, too, live in the Northern Virginia region area, Annandale. That's what we're all about here. Mm-hmm. In the East Coast of America. What's the time difference between us right now? I'd say, what?
6 hours?
4 hours?
I think it's six hours.
It's about that, yeah.
Six hours? 6 hours. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
It is a range.
So we're
late for me, early for you.
So you can see by my background, it's early evening, inexplicably.
And you see by my background that it's a basement or something like that.
That's correct.
See? I've got, if you might not be able to see it, but I have keyboard spray, which is important.
Oh, yeah, that's
kind
important
of home
for
office.
Yep.
Presumably to clean your keyboard.
Yeah, or your face if you get out of line.
That's what I need. Well, I have tasked you both to come up with who is the best cooking duo or the best pair to be a good cooking team in Star Trek. Mr. Name, No Name Namer in chat, any links? Where can people find you, just out of interest? If they need to search for your podcast.
If they want to find us, you can get us at www.itsgotstartrek.com. Mm. That's the easiest way to find us. But, of course, we're all over social media, at It's Got Star Trek, and in most of the social media places, whatever names they happen to be going by.
There's an apostrophe in the it's between the T and the S, but not when you're writing in the URL.
Not when you're writing in the URL.
No.
To apostrophe or not to apostrophe.
Changes the meaning. Yeah.
It comes up from time to time. It's got Star Trek. It is short for It Has Got Star. The podcast has got Star Trek. It's not possessive. Because people have said you shouldn't have the apostrophe. It's like, no, we should have the apostrophe, except in the case of the URL.
And it is not, it is got Star Trek, because that's not the proper grammar for this situation.
No sense whatsoever.
Yeah, it has got Star Trek. Yes.
Right, well, for those aren't familiar with our pros and cons format, we break this down into four sections. The first section being the opening statements, where I will give one of you 2 minutes to perform your opening statements, and at any time the opposition can throw a swift objection, stopping the clock and potentially scoring a point if I deem their argument relevant and pertinent. After each contestant has gone round 2 minutes, then we will go on to the evidence gathering round, where both of you will present without interruption a piece of evidence, and then the both of you will discuss it at the end to declare whether this evidence is also pertinent. Round three will be cross-examination. Each of you will get two questions taken in tandem to ask your opposition, and how well it is answered may also decry points going around. Finally, the last round, 4 minutes to give your final closing statement, for which you can also be objected and interrupted at any point with a swift cry from your opposition, and I am very much looking forward to this. So,
what format does the cry have to be in?
Oh, with whatever your heart desires.
Like that sort of thing?
If that yeah. Actually, no, get your cries ready now. So, Patrick, what is your cry for this evening?
Something along those lines.
Okay, you might need it a bit louder because your microphone didn't quite pick that up.
Yeah,
that works.
Yeah. Okay. I think your frequencies are too high that your microphone doesn't pick it up.
Yeah, there's always cats around me now.
So, So mine will be more like hoo-ah!
That's assertive. I like that. Very assertive.
Yeah, it is.
Very good.
That's good.
Yeah. That might have scored you a point, but maybe we'll see. Okay. Let's go. Patrick first. Your opening statement. Please, your 2 minutes begin now.
All right. So, first of all, in this case, you know, you've asked us which Star Trek duo would win a cooking competition. And I'm going to use the Star Trek's penchant for time travel shenanigans to put together two folks who may not have otherwise had an opportunity to interact. Because I think that the duo that's going to win a cooking competition is Captain James T. Kirk, circa 2266, that version of Captain Kirk, and Seven of Nine, circa 2377, about a year or so.
Dan
and I didn't
choice.
Talk about this ahead of time.
We didn't. I had a feeling it was Seven of Nine for some reason.
I had a feeling. Well, he knows I have a fondness for Seven of Nine. But my primary arguments for this duo is that, you know, Captain Kirk is highly adaptable, and Seven of Nine is really technically proficient and learns things quickly. But importantly, both of them are really mission-oriented. And I think this is important in a cooking contest because I think so many people would say, like, oh, you got to go Ben Sisko, you got to go Captain Pike. It's like, yeah, they're amazing chefs, but they're amazing chefs. They're going to want to cook from their art, from their heart, and cook something that's meaningful to them. That's not necessarily going to win you a cooking contest. So Captain Kirk and Seven of Nine are going to be able to take stock of the judges, the vibe, and be like, okay, we know what's going to work. They're not going to necessarily make the best meal, but they can make the meal that's going to win the contest. Doesn't matter if it's a barbecue contest, best pie, Iron Chef style. It doesn't matter. They'll adjust and adapt to whatever makes sense to win the mission, which in this case is to win the cooking competition.
You still have 10 seconds on the clock.
And they're both comfortable bending and breaking the rules. So that could be helpful.
Cheating. He's promoting cheating. I object to that.
There you go. The black alert starts the end of the show. Well done. You got through that with zero interruption, so I'm going to give you 2 points for that.
I do object to his promotion of cheating, though.
Interesting.
I'm not promoting cheating. I'm just declaring who do I think would win.
Okay.
And I think that's one of the reasons, because yes, both of them are not as encumbered by typical Starfleet morality. Let's
interesting.
Let's
so you've got Fair James enough. T. Kirk era, TOS era. And Seven of Nine. Did you say which era Seven of Nine was from? Is this Voyager?
Yeah, about 2377, okay, which is so about Voyager. A year or so before they came back.
She's not going to assimilate James C. Kirk on site then. She will willing to work with him.
She's been with the crew long enough to appreciate humans and her quest for her humanity, but she's not yet what she grows into later, say in the era where she's hanging out with an elderly Captain Picard, for example.
Interesting. Okay. In which case, Dan, it is now your 2 minutes. Please continue. Please start now.
Okay. Hello, everyone. I would like to first take this opportunity to let everyone here know that I think you're all super cool people, and I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine. You know what I mean?
I object. So, this is not an objection. Because you're not making an argument. You're merely further ingratiating yourselves to the audience.
I just want to show that the level of respect.
I'm just saying I don't think paused, this audience, I don't think they are so stupid to fall for your tricks. I think the audience
is not
very
a trick.
Smart. They're going to through your business.
No, I just want to show them that the love is there. This has nothing to do with my argument. Right. I'm just letting them know that I appreciate them, and they can appreciate me back in their way if they wish to.
I won't award points at this stage, but I will say you have 1 minute and 45 seconds to get to the point. Let's go.
Okay. When people think of a good cook, they think of someone who can make a delicious meal. But setting priorities and managing time are also undervalued skills of any successful chef. What do you do when you have to cook for a couple and one orders a steak well done and the other orders theirs rare? You don't simply throw both slabs of meat on the grill at the same time and hope for the best. You have to time it out. Imagine while you're doing that, you have to prepare a salad and bring that out first, while also ensuring that the mashed potatoes aren't cold when the steaks are ready to be plated. There's also prep work to be completed prior to receiving the first order. You want to make sure you don't run out of garlic, and you don't, and you're not going to bake a cake in a few minutes if that's what they decide they want for dessert. You have to take into account what is needed and what might be needed. Now imagine doing that for a room full of people of varying group sizes. It takes knowledge, communication, experience, priority management, and emotional management. I believe that the team of Data and Jordy would be suited to this task like no other.
I was hoping you'd run out of time before you got
judge,
to the name.
Judge, please. Judge, please.
Please, order. 40 seconds.
I believe that the team of not only do they have the knowledge of superior engineers, they also have communicate as a unit. There's no question that they have experience. If observing their actions weren't enough to convince you, consider that not just anyone gets assigned to the position of engineer for the one and only Starship Enterprise. In addition, they basically spend their
day... There's been a number of Starship Enterprises.
Judge, please, please.
I'll pause the time. Was that an objection, Patrick?
No, I'm sorry.
Please.
It was being pedantic.
18 seconds on the... In addition, they basically
spend their day assembling and modifying Starship components, constantly balancing sets of priorities to keep the Enterprise not only running but in tip-top shape. After all, maintaining the giant bomb that is the warp core on a ship is basically the same thing as cooking a souffle. Yeah. It's a constant balancing act of temperature, time, ingredients, and intuition. I didn't get to finish, and I blame Patrick that I didn't get to finish.
And you should.
Is it part of a Romulan plot? A ploy to start a war?
Well, for that, I will give you a shiny point for getting through your statement. But if you wish to continue the rest of your statement, I will allow it due to the unheralded interruptions you were given at by Patrick.
Thank you. I'm keeping a ship from blowing up. It's like cooking a souffle. It's a balancing act of temperatures, times, ingredients, and intuition. And with a warp core, much like with a souffle, you never open the door until you know it's ready. And whether you're in the weeds because the Enterprise is about to phase out of this dimension, or because you receive 10 simultaneous orders of paella, you must manage your emotions because a hot head is a dead head. If you can read the schematics of the components in engineering, you can read the recipe book for the food produced by a kitchen.
Congratulations. Well done. Very effective. Very passionate argument. I think, do you know what? I'm going to give a point for the passion. I felt everything behind that. You would definitely ingratiate yourself into this pair. So we have Captain Picard and Seven, represented by His Honor Patrick, and Geordi and Data. What era Geordi and Data are we looking at here, Dan? See, does Patrick have set the bar here for that?
TNG, just the TNG.
Just TNG general.
Anywhere in there.
Anywhere in TNG. They've proven themselves throughout that whole thing.
That's a good one. Okay, before we lead on to the next round, it is time for...
All present respectfully stand.
All stand, thank you. Right, okay. Next round, on to evidence gathering. You two will have prepared two pieces of evidence to present to your counterpart to present to me to say, hey, this further backs up my argument and supports my claim. So, this time, Dan, let's start with you. What is your first piece of evidence? And I have to warn you, this is a free open session, so you can be interrupted, so if you do wish to discuss it and debate it, but please, Patrick, do allow Dan to at least present a part of his point, otherwise this guy's gonna get you.
Get to your feet, criminals.
Please, Dan, go ahead.
That's scary.
It's nice to have someone on my side here. In the episode I Borg, Geordi, among others, have a somewhat adversarial relationship with the captured Borg that becomes known as Hugh. Over time, Geordi becomes attached to Hugh and ends up treating him with respect, and one could argue as an equal, a concept that is basically unheard of when discussing relationships with the Borg, an indiscriminate consumer of souls. This respect is important in the kitchen, as I can tell you firsthand that there can be an adversarial relationship between chef and critic regarding what a chef produces and how a critic consumes it. Data has no emotions, so he would look at it on a strictly educational level. Jordy, though, would take into account how his food made the consumer feel. Instead of blowing them off for not appreciating his food, he would not only want to get to the bottom of the issue, he would respect their opinion and feel obligated to make things right. A critic is an equal, not an indiscriminate consumer of souls.
Interesting. Right. Please, Patrick.
You used lots of hand motions, which are very convincing. I get it. I do the same thing. But you have not yet convinced me that Jordy, of all people, would really manage. I stipulate all the skills you've ascribed to him. 100%. I don't think he's going to make a good Fungili. I don't think he's going to quite manage it. Not bad. I don't think he's going to be a terrible cook. He's got an engineer's passion, not the passion for sauces and breads and crustaceans and all sorts of things like that. You mentioned paella. I think Data, you know, I could see Data having the technical expertise. But again, you know, I think that era matters, because remember when Data was trying to learn the violin and people were saying it kind of felt a little cold, even though he was technically perfect. And it wasn't until Data started, making a point to learn different styles and combine them in interesting ways that some of that passion started coming out. So I think Data has more potential there, but I think Jordy might drag him down a little bit.
I don't know. I did make a point about Data as my second point, if you want me to follow up with that. I hear what you're saying, but like I said before, engineering and cooking are really both about putting things together. It's about structural integrity.
Well,
Wait a second.
Okay.
And look, you can talk about cooking as...
That's what we're doing today.
Like, yes. Let me finish my statement, but instead of trying to see, you're trying to derail my argument. You say I'm trying to ingratiate myself with the audience. You're trying to derail my argument, not with logic, but through surface level misdirection, and you're using 100%. mocking tones, you're appealing to emotion right now by trying to knock me off concentration. Mm-hmm. Let me express my point so people can make the logical choice for themselves. Okay? As I said in my opening statement, people can make a delicious meal. And like you said with Captain Pike and Sisko, yes, they have the passion for cooking, but it's not just about the passion for cooking. It's about the recipes that are made, and it's about the line. You got your sous chefs, your prep cooks, your fry cooks. It's about them all working together as a team, as they would in the engineering unit, to make sure that all the parts come together in the time they're supposed to, based upon the priorities at the moment, given like the amount of goals they need to serve at any given time. So yes, love and passion is a part of this whole thing, but passion's not going to get you through it. You're going to need organization. And that's something that Jordy and Data complement each other on, is organization. And with the Data point, is it time for Patrick's point, or should I go to Data's point, since Patrick brought up Data?
Well, I wanted to respond briefly to your point, because I don't disagree with any of your points. I disagree with how they apply to the specific scenario, because I think you're right. I think Jordy is a great manager. And I think he could probably manage a kitchen with a team of people who have specific skills in those different areas, as you described. But
unless the sous chef is Leah Brahms, in that case, we've got a problem.
Well, that's the thing. And I holographic or real. I envision this as they have to do the cooking. And I think that's where you need that taste and flavor. You need to have some concept there. And I think both Data and Jordy might have a little bit of difficulty there. Now, here's what I'll say. I will make a big concession here. If you're limiting this to baking, and that could be breads, it can be desserts, whatever, I think you're probably right. I think Jordy and Data, baking is so reliant on precision of temperature and timing and the ratios of ingredients. I think they probably win out if this is solely about baking. But if we're talking about cooking more generally, cooking a meal or cooking a particular dish that's not just baking, you know, you're talking about a chili, a roast turkey, Wiener Schnitzel, something along those lines. I think you need to have a little bit more of that flavor.
Okay,
flavor game going.
You know how people talk about they can tell the difference between an MP3 and a record, and then other people say that no, an MP3 has enough resolution that it covers all the frequencies that can be heard by the human mm-hmm. ear. The record may have the higher and lower frequencies, but people don't hear that. So all mm-hmm. MP3 is good enough, and that's what I'm saying. With the level of intelligence shared by Data and Jordy, the resolution of their flavor knowledge is going to be enough that your average consumer is not going to be able to tell the difference.
Yeah. I'm going to add the resolution of my flavor knowledge to my lexicon now. I guess that needs to come out somewhere.
That is a good term. However, another quick point is they're not serving this meal to a generic audience. It's not just a bunch of Starfleet officer friends. It's a cooking competition. And one presumes, unless this is one of Dr. Crusher's 10 forward activities, where she just grabs whoever she can to participate, like in her plays and stuff. We're going to presume maybe they've invited, and maybe this is an unfair presumption, but I was kind of thinking that they've invited some top Starfleet.
Well, you said any kind of competition from a regular cooking competition to Iron Chef to anything. So I'm talking about on
in
average.
In each of those cases, you have specialized judges, I think.
Is this the...
Okay,
the
so great... you make all the rules of this competition.
Well, I believe this will be the Great Beta Quadrant Baking Competition, if you wish it to be, yeah. But we shall apply it. If you're going to go specific for baking, you will have to hold up that argument for the rest of your case.
Yeah, because I think of it more broadly than that.
Well, I think of it more broadly too. But you're assuming that it's going to be like one or two judges, and I'm saying, but you also said it could be any kind of baking competition. So I'm going to say, on average, there'll be competitions with a few judges. There'll be competitions with a group of like a whole civilization. It's Star Trek. They can have it with the whole planet.
The whole planet votes. I can see.
Yeah, the whole planet votes.
You replicate the meal for everybody,
because it's a planet. They all have like one habitat.
It's the food planet.
Star Trek planet. Yeah, right. Star Trek planets have all one thing they're all about. So.
Yeah, all the continents have the same weather.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's the barbecue continent.
The barbecue. Yeah, they. I think they might do well in the.
Oh, you
they
get
might
a point
well
for barbecue continent. I'm giving you a point for that.
Exercise we're doing today is making me desperately hungry.
Now I want to know though if a pro audio dude can like tell the difference between a high quality MP3 and a record. That's now what I'm thinking about because that would if I had that evidence it would help my case.
I want to know if an MP3 can tell the difference between a well cooked scrambled eggs and a pile of gross eggy grossness.
Well, on that note...
A sentient MP3.
On that tangent, I will be giving the point. I believe to Dan, you have expressed yourself passionately. I say that's a submissible piece of evidence. Yeah, Patrick, what is your first piece of evidence?
So my first piece of evidence is really talking speaking to Captain Kirk's ability to adapt to the situation at hand and to utilize the resources he has at hand. And that's staff resources, physical resources, all, you know, intellectual, all that sort of thing. And it's tricky. I had a tricky time with this because he's famous for this. I mean, this is like one of the core things about Captain Kirk is you throw him in any situation. He doesn't believe in a no-win situation, that sort of thing.
As he's staring he's had at a souffle.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? And again, you know, to reframe my initial argument, I think Captain Kirk is really well positioned to find himself in a situation. He's in a cooking competition. Doesn't matter, Dan, you've offered various scenarios, a whole planet of people, two judges, whatever. He will take that, whatever it is, and he will adjust and adapt his thinking when it comes to the preparation of the meal and the selection of ingredients and final product and all that stuff, in order to best position him to win that contest, because he is mission-oriented. He will think of that. And examples of that are like when Khan trapped him in Regula 1 in Star Trek 2, and he had that unbreakable code with Spock. He had that secret unbreakable code that made him get rescued later, right? He adapted to that situation, knowing that their comms were being monitored, so he spoke in that, again, highly sophisticated code that they developed. And, you know, a similar example is like in Star Trek VI, when it looks like the Enterprise is fired on Chancellor Gowron's ship. Kirk, of all people, he didn't want to be there in the first place, and he certainly is not you know, well inclined towards the Klingons, but he does what it takes, given his options at the time and given the resources, to move things forward towards finding an ultimate resolution and peace. And it's, again, it's that adaptability and mission-oriented aspect of particularly Captain Kirk that I think is going to help him select good things, have a good idea, and move the project forward with assistance from Seven of Nine and her technical expertise.
I think that you make a good argument.
All right, we're good then.
if we were talking about a full kitchen with a full staff, with a whole crew of kitchen crew, because you're talking about a captain delegating orders to a crew. We're talking about two people. Who's he going to delegate to? One other person? To Seven of Nine? And then how? Like, a captain is the highest level of abstraction in the command structure of a ship, right? So a captain's going to depend on like a whole group of people, a whole array of people. So like I said, I think your argument is well suited for a kitchen staffed by an entire crew of people, not just a duo. That is basically the crux of my issue with that argument.
It could be, although I would push back and say that, you know, we don't have a tremendous amount of evidence for Captain Kirk's culinary expertise, but we've seen him scrambling some eggs in Generations.
Scramble some eggs.
He's joined his buddies and roasted some marshmallows.
Marshmallows.
You call them marshmallows. I don't know. There's a vibe about the guy. He's a down home fellow from Iowa. Yeah, I figure, you know, he can throw together a good hearty meal. I don't think he's going to be producing any haute cuisine, even with the assistance of Seven of Nine.
You think he has a good vichyssoise?
He trained on the finest of barbecue continents.
Right. I bet he'd be good at barbecue. But I don't know about those
But at the same time, even though it's only a team of two people, I mean, he can delegate a lot of the more finicky stuff to his partner in crime, Seven of Nine,
Partner in crime, Seven of Nine.
Yes. Partner in crime, Seven of Nine. It rhymes. And I think, you know, okay, those two working together individually. Yeah, maybe not the top, but you know, this is about a partnership.
Do you think either Captain Kirk or Seven of Nine know about the five French mother sauces? I don't know. Like I said,
no,
barbecue,
Seven of Nine,
eggs,
Seven of Nine.
Eggs. Yeah, sure. Who can't make eggs? Everyone can make eggs.
No.
Eggs?
Dan.
No.
There are
eggs?
Lots of people who cannot make eggs.
Let me tell you something about eggs. Let me tell you something about eggs.
Let me tell you about eggs.
Let me tell you, brother. Let me tell you something about eggs, brother. Eggs. Eggs can be, anyone can make eggs if they just go through the proper steps to make good eggs.
The
problem is most people don't do that.
Of your self-help cookbook, I know.
No, but most people,
that's not what here to sell.
No, look, it doesn't take skill to make good eggs. It takes just effort to follow the steps of making good eggs. And most people don't care about eggs, which they should, I agree, because bad eggs. Wait a second, because bad eggs are terrible, but I'm just saying anyone.
Okay, I believe we have gotten slightly off tangent point here, but your evidence to say that Captain Kirk's command style or his way of organizing a ship, but Dan, you countered with, well, they're not running a ship, he's running a team of two. I believe, Dan, your point is a little bit more salient, so I'm willing to give you the point on this one. And with that, don't get too cocky. I can withdraw these points as easy as I give them. How about, Dan, your final piece of evidence, please?
Okay, now on the subject of Data. As we know, Data is an android and is on a personal quest to understand what it means to be human. As such, he is often engaging in acts that give him perspective on the human condition. What better way to do this than through art? Now, Patrick, yes, you did bring up the point about him playing the violin and how people were kind of like, oh, it's missing something. So we know he plays the violin. We know he acts and plays. I believe, though, that there's nobody out there that would treat the art of cooking with a level of importance and respect more than Data. Even though something may be missing in his violin playing, you know he's treating it with as much respect as he knows how to, because he knows that's the possible gateway into humanity. And cooking is the same. It's an art. And in the lovable moments when Data misses the point of an activity from the perspective of a person, he has Geordi there to remind him why people often engage in such activities to begin with. This was evident in the episode Elementary Dear Data, when Geordi explained to Data that solving a mystery isn't fun if you know all the details ahead of time. So Geordi is the perfect companion to Data in this respect, as he is able to keep Data focused. Data has displayed an analog to emotion before, though, such as in the episode The Offspring, where he implements his own version of procreation by building and activating his own android. He treats this android as his offspring, and the episode ends with a heartbreaking but inspiring example of how emotions can come in many forms. Passion exists in Data, and that passion can be directed towards the art of cooking.
Okay, I agree with all of that. I don't think Data has very good taste, though. I think we've
That's why Geordi's there.
Well, I don't think Geordi has that much great taste either. But Data, I mean, Data has remarked on, you know, when he's talking about drinking, you know, he does, he and Odo do the same thing where they pretend to drink in a sense to, in order to be less socially awkward and make people be less off-putting. Data will drink something that lubricates his insides. But he seems a little bit, maybe confused isn't the right way, but to not fully apprehend just sort of the idea of flavors, right? I think there's more evidence that he can appreciate things like music and visual art. Those are things that he seems to process well.
Because I would have argued that his ability not to taste is on par with his ability to understand the beauty of music. It's something that he's attempting to understand through logic, but he still has that passion. But you're saying that he has an ability to appreciate music more than he does cooking. Of eating.
I just think that, and I think what you're saying, it does make sense that you could make them all parallel with each other. But I think the evidence on the screen is he's a little bit more confused about things that, like, literally about flavors. Like, I think it's just like it's concept that, you know, who knows, maybe later on Data a little bit better. That's where I think season one TNG Data has no clue as to the flavor stuff. Maybe season seven, maybe Generations when he gets the emotion chip, maybe he understands because there is so much emotion tied into flavor. Whereas I think you can have a sincere appreciation of visual or auditory arts, even if you don't have that, you know, emotional component to it. Flavor, again, maybe it's not the strongest argument in the world, but I would be on the side of saying that there's something about flavors that have there's a je ne sais quoi about the process of appreciating a flavor that may arguably be at least marginally different than appreciating other forms of artistic construction.
Sudden but inevitable in the chat raises a good point. Would Data have his emotion chip for this? I believe you said this is established that this would be pre-emotion chip.
I guess I have to make. I can't decide both. I guess I have to. I've been basing this argument off of him without his emotion chip. So, I guess no emotion chip. I think that once again to go back, I see your point, Patrick, and you make a solid point. I would go back to what I was saying about Data's gonna like have the recipes in his head, and I know that cooking is more than just recipes and building. It's about a love and passion. But to bring it back to the argument again of the kitchen is about like an assembly line. It's about construction. It's if you want an outstanding meal, yes, it helps to taste the food for certain. But if you have the recipes and if you have like the set of instructions ahead of you, I believe it is possible to have enough technical knowledge to be able to get at minimum close enough.
I would counter by saying that Data, you're right. I think in 7 of 9 on my team, I think 7 of 9 you get all the analytical and technical expertise of Data.
We'll get to your evidence.
But with the emotional aspect, because she does have some humanity in her.
Okay. Wrapping this up, I believe, Patrick, that you make a more salient point that you need a something extra in terms of something that Data just doesn't have. And although Geordi is there, he's got the taste buds of a Klingon Targ. So I will give you the points there, although I'm not determining that right now. I believe, Patrick, it is time for your final piece of evidence before we go to the halftime.
All right. So next piece of evidence focuses on 7 of 9, right? And so I touched briefly on, you know, that was what I was just saying about 7 of 9 having the technical and emotional aspect. It wasn't something I thought about before. It was in reaction to what you were saying, Dan. So I think she's an analog to Data in this situation, except with maybe a little bit of an advantage over Data, whereas Kirk can kind of, you know, be the analog to Geordi. Yeah, except maybe has better taste. But the piece of evidence specific to 7 of 9,
but not the technical know-how. Sorry, maybe not.
Seven of Nine's ability to rapidly solve problems, right, under stress is well known. That's like one of the, again, one of the main things about her is that she's able to come up with solutions, again, often unencumbered by physics, by Federation physics or Starfleet morality or rules. And sometimes that constrains her, right? But she's that, like, she's very open-minded in that sense when it comes to coming up with solutions to things. Just to give a few examples of when Seven of Nine saved Voyager and her crew, with her quick thinking and technical ability, she figured out how to use Borg nanites to resurrect recently dead people, and for some reason did use that on
and Neelix. Cook them.
And no, that would strengthen my argument, but no, she did. But she resurrected Neelix. I'm entirely sure why.
It's because she resurrected this bird souffle.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that would be key.
She figured out how to contain and destroy the Omega particle, which is, that's a whole big thing. And forget about her own personal connection as a Borg who sort of idolized this particle, to have a hand in not only getting to see it finally, when other Borg hadn't seen it, but she was able to destroy it, which they wouldn't have wanted to do. So that's another important thing. And then she also stole Dr. Mbenga's idea about suspending people in transporters, when there was an episode where they had to pass through a part of space in the Delta Quadrant where there were these anti-telepath aliens, and so that she put a bunch of all the telepathic crew, put them in the transporter buffer so she could hide them. She's quick thinking and out of the box thinking, and I think I agree with all your points about how intense the cooking situation is and how much organization is necessary, but I also think coming up with ideas to fix problems. Again, if you're making a stew or something, you know, you can fix it, but you got to know how to do it. You got to come up with ideas. All sorts of things can be thrown at you, and she's the kind of person that's there to make the adjustments. To reiterate, mission oriented. She's really mission oriented. Whatever you tell her to do, if you say, here's the mission, she's going to use all of those skills to try to figure out a way to complete the mission. Again, in this case, winning that cooking competition.
I want to preface this by saying that I have a deep respect for Seven of Nine and her wide range of abilities. But the way you've presented her in this argument makes her come off as a Data light, because you're talking about
Data plus.
Because you're talking about how good she is at making decisions. She's fast at making decisions. Data's the fastest of them all. He's the quickest decision maker, and not just quickest decision maker. He's the quickest at moving around physically. So, like I said.
Okay.
Seven of Nine is not Data light, but the way you presented the argument, her strengths, to me, it's like the thing who can in the Fantastic Four is like the Incredible Hulk light. It's like it's pretty strong, but not quite as strong as the Incredible Hulk. You know,
I think it's a fair point up to a point because I certainly don't want to portray Seven of Nine as Data light. I think she's different. She has that emotion. She's got that humanity that Data doesn't have. And because of her experience with the Borg, I also think that out-of-the-box thinking that Data does not always have. I'm not going to claim that Data can't think out of the box, and often he has come up with important solutions. But Data's also been seen, especially early on in TNG, to be somewhat constrained by his programming, for lack of a better word. It's not a polite way to put it, I suppose. But he he's got his Starfleet training, et cetera, and he has to learn through time how to kind of go beyond his programming, beyond the parameters that have been set for him. Whereas both Captain Kirk and Seven of Nine, I think, have that sort of built into their character that almost the first thing they come up with is going to be against what maybe the normal path would be, the expected path.
Well, if you want one example of Data thinking outside the box, think of Cause and Effect when they were going through the time loop over and over again. The ship was blowing up. Yeah. Data was able to figure out that since he kept pressing the number 3, he was supposed to look at the three pips and listen to Riker's decision because he had the three pips. And that was because the number three was put in his head. That's pretty outside the box thinking to make that association between the number three and the number of pips on Riker.
And you've highlighted one of the best episodes of Star Trek TNG. And yes, in that case, he did.
Actually, that gets you a point. Yeah, Cause and Effect's an amazing episode. Have a point, Dan.
If Seven of Nine were in Cause and Effect, it wouldn't. She would have immediately known because of her internal, you know, business. She would have been like, "Oh, something's wrong." Even before Guinan, she would have been like, "Oh, we're in a time loop. Let's start this out." So I think the advantage goes to Seven of Nine in that particular scenario.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. I was just bringing up an example of how he can think of outside the box, but I see your point too.
Yes. We're not defending Data here. We're in fact enforcing Seven of Nine. So I do believe, Patrick, your point stands. She does have adaptability and creativity as example. So that is a point for yourself. Did I push the button correctly?
Yeah.
I did indeed have a point. Okay, halftime. Winners. We are straddling 5 and 5 on points here between our two contestants. Don't celebrate yet. Mm. There's more to play for. We now enter the cross-examination phase where you get to ask your opponent a question or a line of inquiry. So please, Patrick, would you start? What would you cross-examine Dan's argument with, please?
Well, I think I'd start by just asking, like, what's your deal, Dan?
I'm a pretty awesome guy. I'm good at stuff. I'm good at stuff. You know, I can make eggs.
Stuff. Get to your feet,
I can make
You can make it.
We have a topical question, please. Topical question from the stand, please.
He's vamping. He's.
I want to know really what you know. I know you've presented some evidence, but like you know, and I like Geordi and Data. They're two of my favorite characters in all of Star Trek. But I do. I'm just like I don't want a meal cooked by. I know that's not evidence. That's not even an argument. I'm just saying.
No,
like,
it's not. It's prejudice. It's prejudice. You're judging a book
by
its cover.
Prejudice. I'm not saying that.
You're not even giving him a chance.
I'm not saying I'm against, you know, meals prepared by androids in any sense or anything like that. I could imagine a meal prep android programmed to do that. I don't know. I don't get the vibe from Data and Geordi. I like them as being like out of the box ideas, but I just want to know like what was your thought process? You presented evidence, but I think what made you narrow this down to these two characters?
First, I want to say I think the cornerstone of any good argument is to say I feel like you're wrong. I don't know. I just feel like you're wrong.
It's a vibe thing.
Because what narrowed it down is because the points I brought up before is that they're a solid team unit. They fill in for each other's weaknesses. And their strengths fill in for each other's weaknesses. Like I said, Geordi is able to fill in for when Data has sort of like emotional deficiencies, if that's what you want to call it. Data is able, just has physical and he's mental, like he's a physical and mental powerhouse. He can prep stuff like crazy. He can think of any sort of like recipe he wants to. They're just such a great team. And when they work together, it seems like they accomplish any goal pretty much. You know, and Geordi, you know, has just and like I said, with
except
the
finding issue, love.
Well, like I said, with the issue with Hugh, though, he does have problems with finding love. But with Hugh, he was able to treat Hugh as like, you know, an equal. Like, whereas most people were seeing him as like, oh, no, the Borg. He was able to connect with them on a humanistic level. So that's why I think that, I don't know, it just made sense. Engineering, because to me, an engineering room is like a kitchen. That's basically what it amounts to me, is it's, you know, sort of like managing priorities, time management, you know, you got a room full of equipment that you got to put everything together, the recipes, the schematics, they've all got these sort of parallels with each other that I think would just go hand in hand together. So,
I can appreciate that perspective. Again, I was viewing this more you know, they've got to team up, cook their own meal over some stovetops and at like a Texas barbecue fair or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I think Texas barbecue, you're talking about with like a lot of people? Because remember, it is a duo. And I think they could make barbecue. It doesn't matter what kitchen you put them in. They'll see the requirements and they'll meet them, is how I see it.
Okay. I believe that question answered very succinctly. Well, I say question, more statement. But Dan, have a point for that, please. You have answered it. What is your question for Patrick?
So I've seen like some strengths that Seven of Nine can bring to the table, but I'm still not quite sure what Captain Kirk brings to this. And I don't know if this is a proper question because you've kind of already answered that.
Sounds like the question Patrick asked.
Yeah.
I don't.
What's your deal?
I don't know. What's going on? What's up?
Oh, please continue.
Okay, so
I'm happy to expand on that.
Okay, how about this? Seven of Nine, Captain Kirk. What would be their roles? What roles would you say they'd have in the kitchen, and how would they divide those roles up?
I think it's a very good question, and it's one that I have thought about, actually. I've prayed on it.
Uh-oh, I just played right into his hands.
Ah, it was a trick. No, really, I envision when I'm thinking about this, I'm like, okay, Captain Kirk, he knows how to deal with people. He knows how to deal with stress. He knows how to deal with all manner of situations. He also has that ability, which I think is important in leaders, especially mission-oriented leaders, to kind of pull back and almost not take it too seriously. It's not that he doesn't, but it's where he's kind of like, all right, this is the deal. We got to win this contest. And that's why I was trying to stress at the beginning that they're not necessarily going to actually make the best meal ever made, but they would know how to make the best meal for that specific contest. Whoever, they would figure out who the judges are, figure out what the environment is like, and all that stuff. And I think Captain Kirk brings a lot in that sense to kind of get the vibe, and then in convey that to Seven of Nine, consult with her, because Seven of Nine is the one who has access to all manner of recipes, etc. She can look that stuff up. She can replicate it, because yes, she's no Data in terms of chopping a bunch of onions super fast, but she can has that the physical and mechanical and engineering aspects that you highlight that I think that would be helpful for both meal prep and the actual cooking process. Captain Kirk, I think, is more the schmoozer, getting the vibe, figuring things out, tasting it. You know, I think Captain Kirk would be the one to be like, all right, we're almost there. You know, I keep imagining a giant bowl of chili or something. But that's what I think Captain Kirk brings. He's got that heart and emotion and that ability to connect to people, both friends and enemies alike, adversaries and allies. And a judge could be both. A judge in a cooking contest could be an adversary or an ally.
I feel like your team, though, is missing the exact things you are criticizing my team for, in the sense that you're talking about how Data and Geordi wouldn't be qualified to sort of cook and test food. Kirk has no cooking background, and yes, he can taste food. Anyone can taste food.
Yeah.
So what? Who says that Kirk has a better palate than Geordi? Geordi does. Nobody
Kirk
can
goes to all those state dinners. You know, he's got Chancellor.
Okay,
Cowan,
I'm sure. Yeah.
He's sitting around. He's invited to stuff that.
And as far as talking about
Geordi and Data, may not be always invited.
And as far as the points again, back to Seven of Nine, you talk about, like, yes, Data can shop things faster. You talk about how she can look things up quickly. Data's got that right in his head. He doesn't have to look it up. It's all right there. So once again, she's a Data light in this situation.
Yeah. Depending on the terms of the contest,
I'm not seeing how their strengths are really any different.
I agree. I understand. But we also, it depends on the contours of the contest, which we haven't specifically. So you're right. In a certain contest where it's like, you've got to come up with a recipe in 10 seconds. All right. Data's going to win out on that. But if it's a more standard cooking contest where you come, you got some time to think about it. You come with your ingredients and et cetera, put some thought into it before the contest. I think Data's advantage is mitigated because you don't need that speed necessarily. The speed can be helpful in the moment. I will certainly concede and stipulate that Data is going to kick everyone's ass when it comes to chopping up carrots and onions and getting the ratios of things right. That is a huge advantage that your team has. But I will again talk about, you know, there's that emotional component. If I'm putting Geordi up against Kirk in terms of who can taste things better, I'm picking Kirk. And more importantly, Seven of Nine, we know that she loves good flavors. When she, the first time she gets to like have ice cream or something, her face goes crazy. She's somebody who can appreciate good flavors.
But she can also.
Because of what she went through.
But because she's so not used to the good flavors, she can probably taste something that's not that good and appreciate it simply because it is a flavor.
Which is why we've got Captain Kirk along.
I believe, Patrick, you have defended your point there quite well enough. Have a point for that. Patrick, please, your final question for Dan.
Excellent.
There's two questions apiece?
There is two questions apiece.
All right.
But get thinking.
We'll have to come up. We'll come up with questions on the fly. I would like to know, Dan, who would have been your runners-up Or at least one runner-up, because I'm sure I went through the same process as you did trying to consider this. I'm sure you thought of a number of different names. Is there somebody you have on the bench just in case Jordy or Data can't make it for some reason? Maybe Jordy's chasing some hologram lady, or Data's got locked in. He's looking for Spot, who's got locked in the closet. Who's the third or fourth person on that bench?
Well, to stick, and not on purpose, but to just so happen to stick with the TNG theme, I think if one of them were not to be able to show up, I think Counselor Deanna Troi would make an excellent cook in terms of you're talking about emotion and being able to read what the judges want, getting a feel for what's going to please them. She can judge the rest of their course, their whole rest of their courses based upon their reaction to that first salad, probably, and she can catch their vibe just by looking at them. And she's in tune and has and is at one with sort of like the food, what food brings. Whereas we know she's very connected with chocolate. So she has this emotional.
As am I, Dan.
She has an emotional connection with food, but not in a way that I would say is unhealthy. She does not have an unhealy emotional connection with food.
I certainly hope not. Because I subscribe to the Counselor Troi diet.
Right. So she can find that link between the emotion of food and the emotion of other people, I should say.
I tell you, Dan, that's a good choice. And in fact, I think you had you picked her instead of Jordy, you would have kicked my ass.
It's not over yet.
It's the empathic nature. The empathic nature of Troi, I think, is very important. And more importantly, something I don't think you mentioned was she has a pre-existing relationship with Data in terms of I'm supporting the fact that he's picked the wrong person. That his team.
He's trying to shake me mentally. He's trying to shake me mentally. So. Make me question so. Myself.
Dan went for
psychology going on there.
The old buddy comedy, and he wasn't thinking. He was like, these are Jordy and Data, they're this good guy. Buddies. Troi, I think, would have been a better choice, and that's why I asked you.
Well, since you've agreed,
I think you should lament your choice.
Since you've submitted to Dan's point, and I'm going to give Dan a point for that, for having an awesome backup and you agreeing to it. So, hey, can't not give him a point for that.
I think it's an awesome, but I don't concede that I supported his point because. I'm saying he should have gone with that.
He's trying to get in my head.
I see that. Well, Dan, feel free to get back in the head of his. It is now your turn for your final question.
I guess this is a straightforward question. What meal would you say that Kirk was suited for versus what Seven of Nine would be suited towards making?
I think between Kirk and Seven of Nine, that's very interesting. So if they were forced to be separate, is what you're saying. They have to come up with their own meals, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good question. I think Kirk, you're going to have a big, hearty, country-style breakfast. Certainly could be sort of like a full English or an American version of that.
A full English.
Yeah, I think he could.
Pandering. I think he's pandering. He was getting at me.
This is an equitable court.
It's a good strategy.
That's what you accused me of doing at the beginning, Patrick. Remember?
I didn't accuse. I observed, and I think it's a smart strategy on your part. And so I'm gonna steal that idea. But really, I think Kirk. I think he could probably reliably make a really high quality, big meaty breakfast with bacon or Canadian bacon, eggs, hash browns. If we're doing full English, beans on toast. Get some blood sausages, that sort of thing. Some variation of that, maybe his own. Maybe he does his own twist. I think that's probably what he would do. I think Seven of Nine would pick something much more finicky and be successful at it. Again, going back to baking, could be that she can bake like a really, really good loaf of bread. But I'm thinking right now, since you asked that question, I'm thinking she makes a wicked cocktail. I think she makes one of those really special cocktails, the kind that, you can only get from Guinan or a few other people.
And now she's a mixologist. She's a mixologist now, not a cook.
And if you don't want to count that, we'll stick with the bread. But I think as part of a meal, I count all of that as part of the meal. And I would very much enjoy the opportunity to have a Seven of Nine crafted cocktail with the real stuff, not with the
many meals that were literally cocktails. So I can agree with that. that is considered a culinary art.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know. I think I agree with the Kirk one, but I don't see Seven of Nine having much knowledge about cocktails. I just don't think
it's the ratios. She can do. She can just get. She can get everything.
But once again, it's to bring to your point. It's all about the taste. And does she have a taste for cocktails? I don't think she does.
I think in baking and in cocktails, I think it's more about knowing which ingredients to put in and which ratios to put them in. So I think you need a little less passion in that part.
I don't agree with that at all.
I think if you're making a stew or some eggs or hash browns or something, that's that you need more love in order to make make some good eggs.
Have you ever made Bloody Mary mix? Because I have, and let me tell you, that's more than just measurements and ingredients. Bloody Mary mix?
From scratch?
Yeah, making Bloody Mary mix from
scratch. I've purchased bottles of it. Pour it in the glass, and then you pour in some rum or vodka.
I used to have to do it at a job I had. I made Bloody Mary mix from scratch, and you have to taste that stuff. Yeah. So it depends on what your drink you're talking about. Yeah. I don't think she'd make a good Bloody Mary. I just don't.
Well, maybe not a good Bloody Mary.
I think that's that point.
That example of them Starfleet crazy things with like all sorts of lights and
okay,
and,
well,
and
yeah, what about the one where Guinan flicked
the warp core, the sunset. Yes,
yeah, that looks like an artistic drink to me if ever there was one. So I'm saying the Bloody Mary mix was an example that extends to other drinks and like the one where they go like that.
If she gets to pick a gin and tonic.
She's gonna pick a gin and tonic.
No, she's gonna pick a drink that is suited to her skills and outlook, and she does a warp core breach like I got to enjoy once in the Las Vegas Star Trek experience. It was a big bowl of rum and other nonsense.
Objection!
And
relevance!
And a bunch of dry ice.
Yeah, no, this is true. I think that's cool. Yeah, that's true. We are getting off topic. Okay, I am actually going to say, Patrick, you do get the point for this because you did answer the question that was given to you, despite maybe some good points. So I think Danny also very good point. So point apiece on that part. Excellent. And as we enter into your closing statements, you are 8-8 apiece. So everything to play for here. Successful objections, I should note, will get you points here. But you do have... would you prefer a longer or a shorter time?
Probably shorter.
Let's do a 2 minutes.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe Dan needs longer. Maybe he needs a longer, more cumbersome argument to defend his position.
What? Oh, because I'm more well thought out and I think about it through. That means that, like, that's actually a weakness in Patrick's world. So.
Let's find out.
I'd say three or 3.5 minutes.
We'll go for two. We've settled. Apart from that, I've got that set on my timer in front of me and I can't be bothered to change it. So, good. Dan, you have 2 minutes beginning now.
Okay, as far as cooking is a multifaceted process. It begins with preparation and it ends with the product. As far as prep work goes, there can be no equal to data. We've seen how quickly and precisely his hands move across a console, navigating through the various menus in the Elcar system interface, dicing tomatoes and potatoes, slicing red onions and radishes. It's all the same to him. There's no concern of contamination since he is continuously aware of sterility of his environment. And let's not forget, he is basically incapable of accidentally cutting himself. And even if he did, he would be immediately aware of it. This brings me to my next point. Another skill a cook needs to have is the ability to stay cool and collected. And since Data doesn't feel fear, he won't lie about any mistakes he made, assuming he's even capable of them. And since he doesn't feel stress, he won't forget to prep the ingredients for the main courses. And he will, in fact, be able to know exactly how much time is required to prepare every single sauce and spice and dressing from scratch. No chance of being served frozen food when Data is the prep cook, since he can analyze the consumption statistics of the group of people that are expected to enter the establishment based on the history of the environment combined with the eating habits of the people who are to be in attendance. Data also has a literal encyclopedia of culinary knowledge, from recipes to techniques. All ingredients will be prepared so fresh, so clean, and from scratch. Since Geordi's visor can detect both ultraviolet and infrared light, he has the ability to merely eyeball, so to speak, any piece of food and know exactly and instantly the stage at which each item is in its cooking process. Imagine cooking enough steaks to feed a mess hall and immediately knowing which steaks are ready, and for the ones that aren't, how long it will take until they are ready with just a passing glance. This is by itself a convenient ability, to say the least. According to the Institute of Culinary Education, infrared light can be used to cook food. So if they were to simply reverse the polarity of his visor, Geordi would be able to actually cook the food using infrared capability of his visor, thus offering him the ability to tweak food items that are uneven or need a little boost.
10 seconds.
The ability... wow. This is unfair, because I prepared for 3 minutes, but that's okay.
No, it's just fine. My perspective is just fine.
Black alert, we got to the end there. We got to the end. So, Dan,
that's not fair. I'd say I prepared for 3 minutes and I suddenly only got 2 minutes. So, like, you're
asking
me to change
court. Okay. Dan, you successfully got to the end with 0 objections. That is 2 points, taking you up to 10. 10 points now, Patrick. Go,
can
sorry,
I,
please.
Can you allow me one last point that
please
I wanted
do.
That I want to bring
I,
up? Okay.
I think this is, yeah.
Okay. So if they were to link Data's positronic brain into Geordi's visor, Data would be able to visually map the identities of the patrons through Geordi's visor to their respective food items behind the line, allowing through a heads-up display Geordi to identify which food items belong to which person, giving the opportunity to tweak items further to make sure they were all finished at the same time, using his reverse polarity infrared
wow.
cooking vision.
That's yeah. the season 8 episode we never saw.
So there's a lot of technological ability, like sort of doodads and gadgets they can incorporate by linking together.
Just like on Star Trek Voyager, you've used a bunch of technobabble to try to patch over a weak argument.
Just imagine it's augmented reality, man. Just Google.
I believe it. When you were saying it, it sounded real good.
What are the Microsoft glasses, the augmented reality glasses? It'd just be like that. You know, you'd like, you know, the where you see the thing and you see the names floating. Yeah. HoloLens. Yeah, you see the name. You see the names floating above
Holograms.
The stakes. You see
Holograms.
You see the names floating above the stakes because Geordi Data like linked his positronic brain through it. And so like, and he could be like, that's for this table. That's for that table. And then he'd use his infrared to be like, that's not done. That's done. And he'd be like, and he'd cook him a little bit like laser beam, you know?
Okay.
That's what he could do.
Point well made and articulated and expanded upon. Patrick, you have 2 minutes beginning.
Okay.
By the way, Dan, how does it feel to talk this long without being interrupted?
Oh my gosh, I don't know what to do with myself. I was waiting. I was sweating at one point because I was like, it's going to all fall apart any second now. But it's amazing.
Patrick,
I commend you.
2 minutes.
You're very welcome.
All to play for.
Okay.
Stumming now.
All right. I think that, Dan, you have done a very good job of arguing, making a very strong argument, in fact, for why Data and Geordi should start a restaurant. I think they would be really good restaurant owners. I think they'd be able to handle the very thin profit margins. They'd be good with working with the employees and people. I think they'd know how to hire a good staff, how to organize it all. And you're right, with all of Data and Geordi's fancy technology, although, as you described, people could also just use a HoloLens. But anyway, with...
Objection! Condescension! Condescension!
There was about 30 seconds of your closing argument. You were actually talking about the opposition's case. So, yes, I will give Dan a point there. 1:22, please continue.
I'm leading up to something because you know, I have my arguments, of course, but there's also the strength of Dan's arguments and then weighed against each other, right? They're not in a vacuum. And I do think you make a great argument. They'd run a great restaurant together. I think a cooking contest, not so sure. I'm assuming in a cooking contest, you're going to have judges who are interested in the food. I think they're going to be able to tell the difference between the kind of the passion, the emotion that goes into the flavors. And I do think that Captain Kirk and Seven
your only
of Nine.
Your only argument is passion so far.
Is
that's
the
only argument.
Objection?
That's
objection.
Objection?
That's, objection.
Yeah, okay,
your only argument is passion.
But thus far, but I have not concluded my argument. I mean, I've made several arguments already, but in these closing remarks, I'm just reminding folks of a few of these different things. And and really the key thing is Captain Kirk is highly adaptable. Seven of Nine, she's also adaptable. She's somewhat more rigid than Captain Kirk, but she's got the combination of her technical expertise and her joy at experiencing this aspect of humanity, which is the act of cooking and preparing a meal for somebody. It was a very human act.
Objection! Pointing out the lack of humanity in Data is irrelevant.
I'm not pointing out the lack
cruel.
Of humanity. You just pointed that out. I would never.
No,
that.
You
I
did.
Think,
you were, you keep
Data
bringing up passion, joy. These are things that my team lacks.
I think the
passion
character,
and joy.
I think the character of Seven of Nine, especially in the period that I've designated, is really playing around and experimenting with her humanity and finding ways to express that. And that's why I think this version of Seven would be good at doing that.
That's a point for you, Patrick. Well defended. 23 seconds remaining. Please go.
I guess the final point is just to talk about that, again, that mission-oriented thing. I think it's nothing against Data and Geordi. They're also really good at mission-oriented stuff, but I think in terms of having that, the emotional quotient and the experience of dealing
emotion
with people,
quotient.
I think that's where you get Kirk, you get Seven of Nine, put them together, combining their efforts.
Black
I think
alert.
They're going to be able to figure it all out.
There we go. Congratulations, you got to the end of your argument. You get a point for that. Which brings us to the final scores of tonight. And we have a close one. So very close, but there has to be a winner. Patrick, you have 10 points. Dan, you have 11.
Oh,
Jordy and Data would make one of the better cooking duos, but absolutely fantastic arguments all around. Thank you for joining us, you two, on Pros and Cons.
Thank you.
We'll flip back to, we'll get back to the studio and we'll have a chat in a second.
Real quick, I want to apologize for dissing on cooking eggs. I think cooking eggs does take skill, and I regret saying that earlier that it does not take skill. So my apologies for that.
Okay, it was a heated debate.
I was mad. Now. I was angry.
We're back in the studio, guys. Awesome arguing. That was kind of, I think that's like one of our most heated debates. That was good. What? Right, Dan. What? Because these were both kind of like Patrick. I can't understand Seven and Kirk in a way, but what made you pick? What actually made you pick Data and Geordi? Like we.
That's what I asked.
I know, but like.
I think.
Didn't you just hear this whole thing?
I was in and out.
I was going to different people. I also went to like, well, there's Pike and Cisco. Mm. I definitely went to that group. Yeah. But then I was just thinking around, well, what other qualities are there?
Yeah.
And having actually worked in restaurants for several years,
Pike has a huge advantage over me in this. He actually knows how all this stuff works.
He knows
so when I watched like what goes on in engineering, I was actually thinking about the things I said, like time management and like assembling things and stuff like that. You're right. There is definitely one of the things that was my foil, one that I recognized as going along, is it's going to be hard to argue this passion point all the other pieces seem there to me, just sort of like this whole crew of people, this group of people working together, whether it's two people or 10 people or whatever. It's all about, you know, managing priorities and designating tasks and doing things in order, and like the recipes come from the top, but then you just get like the other people that you get like everyone is important in the process, you know. I mean, making recipes is a very small part of the whole entire process, so and something about that, and plus like I like the idea of Data's like technical abilities that also played into it as well. I think I started with Data and then I was like, well, Geordi is the perfect companion for Data, and actually, you know what, I don't remember if I started with Data or Geordi's visor. It was one of the two, both of them, but it was based on technical ability though.
I thought the visor argument was very good, and it came out right there at the end. It was sneaky because I was like, whoa. That's why I attempted to undermine it, because I was
almost like, Patrick, what made you pick? Like, do you not think that Kirk and Seven in the same workplace is going to cause all sorts of HR disasters? Like, that's good. That's a recipe for.
There's some good argument. First of all, you have to have the conceit that some sort of time travel thing happens to get them together. And I was sort of a very old Kirk. Yeah, well, that's why I was sort of thinking like, okay, well, what you do is they both have to time travel to like, again, I don't know why I kept thinking of it in terms of either chili cook-off or barbecue, probably just because I'm hungry and it's fall.
This
and
is
I
the
want
problem
to eat
with this
those
one.
Thing. And I imagine them both being put together by, like, I don't know, the temporal cops or something, and being like, you've got to go stop this thing, but you have to play the role. You have to win this contest in order to ingratiate yourself to the evil enemy who's traveled back in time and is trying this is the scenario that I crafted in my head. Because I don't know, when I was thinking about that, again, like Dan, you know, of course, you immediately think Captain Pike, you think Ben Sisko. Both Dan and I know, obviously, you can't go with those because those are the obvious ones. And I knew, and Dan and I did not, we didn't discuss this ahead of time. All we did was we're like, which shows are your characters from? We just wanted to make sure there was no overlap, even though I honestly think it would have been hilarious if we ended up picking the same characters.
I don't know what I would have done, actually, if you guys had picked the same
We would have found a way to be even more contentious.
Yeah, it's like, no, my reasons are better than your reasons.
It's like, I agree, but for better reasons.
Yeah, right.
That was brilliant. I've got to ask a final question before I let you guys go. What meal would they have served for their part of the competition? What would be their signature dish, the one they're trying to impress the judges with?
Dan, I'll let you go first.
I think a room full of steaks And then
you're bringing up steaks. You want to eat a steak tonight, don't you?
I do. I'm really hungry. Room full of steaks. Maybe like a half room full of burgers.
They would want you to type into the AI. Go into the AI image generator and type in room full of steaks.
All the different temperatures.
Like raw to like a hot.
Yeah, all different temperatures, just to show off their skill and ability to cook so many steaks simultaneously. Right. And then for dessert, yeah, cake, like a total cake, like just a delicious, awesome. Because they would build a cake, you know, it would be a resource cake. Is that what you said? Energy cake.
A room full of cake.
A room full of cake. Yes, a room full.
Resource cake. It sounds like an Energon cube or something.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's. Cake. I think just a ton of steaks and potatoes, and then a bunch of cake for dessert. I think they'd
steaks
nail it.
And potatoes. Steaks and potatoes. I will lean back to answer the same question. I will lean back on. I've thought of many different things that they could produce, but I really kind of like the idea of them putting together like an excellent tub of chili, just like a big old pot of chili, but with a spiciness and a smokiness and subtle flavors. Because the thing about chili is you can make chili in half an hour and it's fine, but you got to let it cook. You got to know what you're doing, you know, add the flavors, and it can really be dependent. Again, I think of this in a mission-oriented sort of sense, which is like, I'm not looking to please myself. Pike and Sisko would have pleased themselves. They'd be like, this is right. Mm-hmm. This is the best meal because it
in
pleases my taste. But I think Kirk and Seven of Nine, they'd be like, what do these judges want? And they might even, if they had the opportunity, might even talk to the judges, get a little information, maybe look them up on the Star Trek doesn't have the internet, but whatever the equivalent of the internet
the
is.
The Subspace Network.
Subspace Network.
Their dossier. Look up the dossiers on the judges. But the point being that, you know, with a good chili, you can take it. It's still chili, but you can take it in so many different directions and customize it to suit the flavor of the moment, the flavor of the people, the atmosphere that you're in.
I also I brought up paella for a reason too, because anything like that, paella, jambalaya might be more tough. I don't know which is tougher, jambalaya or paella, but any kind of dish where you have to put together like a balance of ingredients to fit together structurally perfect like that.
The trick with both of those is like the rice, for example, you know, cooking the rice the right way, and then you got to cook all the other things. Everything's got to work in a certain way. It's not always that forgiving to do it well. Risotto is another one. Yeah. I mean, how many times have we had a shitty risotto? Am I right?
Can't even count.
It's watery and terrible.
A sloppy risotto, or you get some dry, crunchy risotto. Come on, what the hell?
I had some boring gnocchi pesto the other day. I was really disappointed.
There's nothing more upsetting than a boring gnocchi. I've said that many times before. Dan knows this.
Yeah, all the time.
Like
you
my
don't
mom
shut up
always told
it.
Me, there's nothing more upsetting than a boring
I'm
gnocchi.
Like, how can you do this? Put some garlic butter on it. I mean, how do you have a boring gnocchi? But I've experienced that, man. I've experienced that.
Cranky asks, who would be the alpha between Kirk and Seven? Who would be the head chef? Who would be the sous?
That's a good question.
I honestly think that would be a counter argument. I think that you might see some issues there. Mm. I don't think that Seven would necessarily immediately, be subservient to Kirk just because of rank or whatever. She's especially with that Borg background. She's like, I don't know.
He's seen too much.
Yeah, exactly. She's got a lot of experience. I think a thing a lot of people forget with Seven of Nine, and most people probably don't forget this, but the fact is that she's got both that aspect of almost being childlike, in that she's a child human. She was 6 years old when she was assimilated, and then she's trying to learn more about humanity. So she's going through a process that a lot of humans go through as they're growing up. But at the same time, she's got so much experience and knowledge left over from when she was connected to the Borg Collective. It's part of what makes her such a fascinating character. Yeah, but I also think that would present some issues if she's trying to deal with an authority situation. We already saw how much trouble she had with Janeway as an authority, and it took time for that relationship to sort itself out. I think with Kirk, she's not going to necessarily immediately be like, oh, he's Captain Kirk. And like you said, Captain Kirk might be distracted by some sort of the phenotypical aspects of Seven of Nine and maybe not realize where she could be beneficial. Although I'd like to think that Kirk, after a few years in command, like he's smart enough to differentiate between a person he's attracted to, and he's not going to get distracted, and he is going to be able to, be mission first. But it could be a problem. Could be a problem.
Excellent. Thank you guys for coming. Thank you guys for doing this. Patrick, I know you've got somewhere to be as well, so I'll let you go. Again, like we said at the start, where can people find you? What do you do? What's your podcast? What is It's Got Star Trek? What do you do each week?
All right. It's got Star Trek. It's a podcast. We talk about Star Trek. We put out content each and every week. So when there's new episodes, like right now, we happen to be covering season 4 of Lower Decks. We cover all the new episodes. When new episodes aren't airing, Dan has crafted an algorithm. And without any AI help at all, he's crafted an algorithm. We actually use this. Sometimes people ask, they're like, do you use this algorithm? We actually use this algorithm because what it does
darn tootin' we do.
It takes,
as Riker would say, you're damn right.
We take last week's podcast, the previous week's podcast, I should say, and Dan ingests it into the algorithm, going through various processes.
Speaking of food.
And it spits out a list of episodes that, based off of the algorithm, that we should watch. Now, both our other co-host, who couldn't be here today, Jesse, and I are—it's opaque to us how the algorithm works and makes a selection. Dan presents us with the list, and we do try to keep it fairly even amongst all the shows. So we've done tons of episodes on TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, TAS. Every series, we cover it all at some point or another. The main thing is we just like to have fun and have a good time. Hopefully you got a little bit of the flavor of that watching us here today.
Definitely.
I think it was a pretty accurate representation.
We do this because we love Star Trek. It's super fun, but we also like having a good time. There's so many excellent podcasts out there that are going to do a much better job at a very specific analytical stuff. But we do try to have at least one clever insight per episode. we don't always manage it, and sometimes we manage it quite a bit more than that. But give us a try. If you're not familiar with us, give us a try. And let us know. Let us know what you think. Just to toot your horns
a little bit more. I love the work you put in, Dan, with all the sound clips. So you pull all the relevant sound clips, the funny ones, the clever ones, and all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of the joy for me, is you bringing up these like hilarious moments. I really hope that guess the clip based off the sound or something.
Oh yeah,
I forget what that's called.
Right. Oh my gosh, what was it? It was guess the sound based upon a short portion of the clip or something. Yeah. I have the abbreviation. It's some old, I haven't played that game in a while. I should bring that back.
Yeah, maybe next week.
I'll do it. Yeah, the game whose title changes every week from week to week.
The best part of the game is to guess what title the game is going to be.
Right.
No, thank you so much for joining us. This is sort of been a long
thank
project.
Thank you for having us.
No, absolutely glad. It's kind of like your podcast is literally one of the top on my feed at the moment. So
we really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
So I thought, well, I have to get you guys on. It's been absolutely brilliant. Thank you very much for coming.
It was an honor. It was an honor being on the show. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Crankiest trick at the mariachi, which means it must be time to end the show. We'll be back on Wednesday, where we'll be playing Star Trek Elite Force 2. Me and Stars will be doing that.
Ooh.
And if you haven't checked it out yet, our latest Star Trek Trek is now up on YouTube. With that, we'll see you soon. Check these guys out, their podcast. Do that, and we'll see you soon. Live long, prosper. Ta-ra.
The handle's Columbo. That's a big 10-4.